Hello and welcome to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob Foster and I am here with the whole crew this time. And we have a special guest, Kristen Buckley. So Kristen, how's it going?
It's going well.
Yeah. Where are you at today? I love your office. It looks like you've got some race bibs back there or something. And I see some guitars and some bookshelf of some kind.
Yeah, I keep telling myself that I'm going to play with some of the music toys. And I've done studio projects in the past and I'm gearing up to do some new things. So. I'm based in Lehi, Utah, which is, if you've never been to the state, it's about 45 minutes south of Salt Lake, and it's kind of the tech hub of Utah. They call it Silicon Slopes, because everybody has to have a Silicon something in their state. But it's after St. George, I think it's the fastest growing city in the state and one of the fastest in the nation, so it's just booming here.
Wow, that's cool. What kind of things are going on out there? Since it's, I guess, kind of the tech area. I know they're building a big data center somewhere out there, right?
Yeah. In fact, I think when I walk my dogs up over the hill, I think I can see one of the data centers. In fact, when I walk where I'm located, like there's huge NSA facilities, there's data warehouses and stuff that are, I see them, it's looming, it's up on the hill, it's massive. But there's just around the hills, there's a little town called Eagle Mountain. And I think that's where like Amazon is building, and I think Google is building, and a bunch of things. But a lot of the tech, I mean, there's a tremendous startup community here. There's a lot of fintech here, tons. A lot of blockchain. Utah is interesting because of the low tax status. A lot of movies are filmed here. It's often not credited. There's just a ton, but it has it's very much a startup culture. I was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, and a lot of it just feels like the Bay Area, except people don't swear and drink as much.
It probably smells less like urine, too.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I've been to San Francisco, and I've never gotten that urine experience. Maybe I lucked out or stayed in a good place.
You're just so used to it at home. I mean, it's something.
That's right.
No, that's cool though. I mean, so what's driving the, what's driving that? You said low taxes and all of that, but it seems like, Utah is somewhat, from my perspective, it's somewhat isolated, right? It's quite a drive to the coast. It's quite a drive to Seattle and all of that. What's driving the culture there? Do you have a lot of tech people there, or are people moving in? No. Or is it just naturally, it's just a tech community there just because, or are people moving in from Tennessee and, San Francisco?
I think the largest influx in Utah, I mean, one, it's beautiful. It's one of the healthiest states because everybody's spending time outdoors. I mean, everything is, I think it's like 80%. I don't know what the number is. 80% of the state is our state or national parks, and it's just beautiful for that kind of stuff. So everybody's constantly outside, but we also have this influx. Like I was born in California, lived for 12 years up in the Seattle area, and then came to Utah. I'd say that California and Washington State are the one and two locations where people move to Utah from, and so of course. Culturally here, you have a high ratio of LDS. Again, I don't know what the number is, 75-80% of the state is Mormon. And it's a very entrepreneurial, very much like being self-sufficient. And so you have a lot of businesses that spring up through that. And that permeates all aspects of the culture. But there's a lot of, again, wealthy people moving from those other states that want to invest and bring tech. And so you see more and more Bay Area companies that are moving here. Another, because I'm at the bottom of the valley, I go out and walk and I look up around the valley, but across the freeway, Adobe just doubled the size of their campus, building this massive building that's unique architecture. You can't miss it. Oracle just opened up a new building. Microsoft just moved into a new building all here in Lehi. So there's just a lot going on.
Oh, that's empty buildings right now, too, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I was in a co-working facility. I haven't had a need to go in for a few months. And people are experiencing that everywhere, but I bet commercial property is just, if they're not hit now, they're going to be hit pretty quick.
It'll be interesting.
Move to Arkansas while you can.
Yeah.
Well, I think we talked about that on our last episode too, how it might impact this whole where, you know, how much you pay people, where they live. They no longer have to live in the city. So it'll be interesting to see how a community like yours, where it kind of has this influx of people, on whether or not that continues to happen if this goes on for a while, as people kind of just pick up and keep working where they are and kind of get used to working where they are. How important is it that everybody's kind of in one place? Or does it continue, you know, maybe cost of living's better out there and it gives them a secondary place to go that isn't West Coast or East Coast or really, you know, expensive to live.
You're hearing more and more companies that are like announcing that we're, you know what, we went virtual throughout this period, but we've decided to stay, to remain virtual. And I think, again, that's going to be that delayed impact to commercial property. But I think it's great news. It's funny, I've been working in the collaboration technology space for most of my career, and yet the majority of the companies that built that technology did not allow people to work remotely. And so they had that same problem. It was when I left the Bay Area, there's a couple of companies I would have loved to have continued working with, but they just didn't allow for any flexibility. And I was tired of commuting 2 to 3 hours every day. And so a lot of that, I think, is changing. That was one of the discussions, the topics for the couple of the keynotes in Inspire this week, was the fact that it's kind of that we've been talking about business transformation, digital transformation. This has forced companies to look at kind of what's possible. And I think for a lot of companies just to figure, hey, we can actually do this. So I think that's great for the workers, bad for people like me that are very social.
I understand.
Us introverts are over here rocking it. So I don't know what you guys are talking about. Yeah. I have to still force my kids to get out of the house. They're so happy. So
I don't know. I really missed being in person for Inspire. You just mentioned Inspire. I love that event. I was there last year in Vegas. It's for those of you not familiar, it's a partner conference, a Microsoft partner conference. And it's a great opportunity, just like Ignite, to go and network and hang out with people. But it's kind of a totally different vibe and a different group of people. You get a lot of sales and marketing and some of those different pieces of the business that you don't get at a tech conference. So I'm kind of really like, I had a tough time this week. I know they did the community zone for Inspire. I know they're trying, right?
It
wasn't the same. Right. Yeah.
It's not the same. Well, it's so similarly, like my clients are all almost entirely ISVs, a couple of SIs. And so that's my biggest event. That would have been my 11th Inspire, formerly Worldwide Partner Conference, my 11th year in a row of attending. And that's, I close one or two deals every year. And it's a big deal. It's worth the investment for me to go and spend a week away. And I complain about all other events, having to travel. And like I love the destination. I hate just the fact that you're then catching up for a week or two afterwards, every one of these conferences, but, you know, Inspire was kind of my, you know, bread and butter event. So.
And on that note of traveling away, I think one of the big things about traveling away though, is the fact that you are there and everything else gets paused. And one of the challenges that I had at Inspire and also Build is the fact that people know that you're at home, they're going to interrupt you. They think that you're spending free time. And before I pretty much got to watch the keynote at Inspire, and that was about it. And even that was multitasking through that. So, you know, I hope I can go back and catch up on some of that stuff. And, you know, I've read through the Inspire book, which is absolutely fantastic, the book of news. So that's a great resource. But I really miss. Not just from the networking point of view, because like you said, Stephanie, that's absolutely fantastic to meet up with you guys from a social point of view, but also from a business point of view. But saying, no, I am away. And I'm going to be zoomed in on this is really key.
But that's the thing. It's you can be virtual. And if I know that, hey, Stephanie and Mark and I need to talk because I want to partner with Pate on doing some activity or some mutual client or something, those are great. But walking around, like going over into the regional zones, that on the expo hall, or walking up and going to an area, a part of the product team, you have no idea about this app or this feature, and just asking questions. Like, you can't just go and do that kind of discovery activity virtually. It doesn't work the same way that you in person, or just casually as we're walking by and seeing somebody like I've not seen you for 6-7 years. Like, you don't have those moments in virtual. So you lose a lot from that. So I get we're trying to make do the best we can for something like this, but yeah, for an event like Inspire, it does not work the same way. And now the one thing that, just to counter what you just said, Brett, is that the benefit of having the same sessions run like 3 times at 3 different times. So same problem, like yesterday, I had 4 or 5 sessions that I kind of earmarked that I wanted to go listen to. I listened to one of them as it happened, because work happened, life interrupted. But being able to go back in and catch it a different time, yes, it's at 1 in the morning, but it's another time, or watch the recording. That's a nice thing to have.
That's absolutely true. And actually, this has really served us as a company really well as well. And that was, as you know, our developers all in Europe, and we can't send across all the developers to all of these different events all the time. So for the first time, actually this year, they attended Microsoft Build, and they were able to watch those sessions over the period of like 4 weeks or something, and really dived in deep on some of them. And we had time to discuss what was the content in those sessions as well, in some of the different R&D meetings that we were having and what have you. So I guess from that point of view, it's really valuable to, as you mentioned, Christian, go back and watch them and pause them and so on. So, or play that 1.5 times the speed as well, which is also useful.
That I've been using that more and more. Yeah, that is fantastic.
So what was the best session that you saw, Christian?
The one yesterday, that was on the, looking for the title of it on my schedule. That was the Tuesday was the ISV one, was the critical one, and then yesterday was the US partners contest. So that was the one that I made, and of course I had another side conversation happening, but I was kind of going back and forth and what, because that's the other side thing that happens is that was running and then a phone call comes in. Just trying to understand, what are Microsoft's goals for the region. I was specifically, since most of my clients are ISVs, I want to see what Microsoft is kind of putting out there as key opportunities for each of the classes of partners. And it was good just to get that. Now, of course, the other thing that happens with these virtual events is that we usually get everything that's going to be announced or discussed beforehand, and then it gets delivered. And then we see, of course, the summary, the blog post, and other things around that. But there wasn't a lot. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I was surprised by. I don't think so. I mean, everything we had heard about prior to the event, that's another new thing over the last couple of years.
Well, I think it's worth talking about some of those things, though, because not everybody will be in that position where they that they were able to see what was going to come up. And some people that are listening to the show wouldn't have also been able to attend Inspire either. So, is there any sort of key announcements that you think are really really awesome, really useful?
So some of the stuff that we kind of heard about, leading up to it, some of the new Teams features, I mean, a lot of the focus around Teams, a lot of the partner opportunities around Teams, and certainly it's always a directional thing from Microsoft when you learn what the Microsoft salespeople are kind of being measured on. And for years and years, Azure consumption was the number one metric for salespeople. And when Teams and Teams adoption got moved into those metrics, hey, there's a a major shift that's happening here. But some of the features, like some of the stuff that we've again heard about the news, the Dataflex, of course, it's the renaming of the Common Data Service. I mean, that was a big deal. Of course, the jokes have just started on the Dataflex Pro. There's Dataflex, Pro Human Ear Edition. Microsoft hasn't been good at naming products for a while, so I'm waiting for some of the fun around that. But
it's got to be Dataflex for Business, surely.
Yeah.
It's just better just to keep the code names, I would say. Just, whatever it was code name, just name it that.
Well, and that's what they do with Project. That's what Project Cortex sounds like, right? It's whatever the code name for that was, and it actually stuck. So we'll see, right, with that one. But for those who don't know or haven't heard about Dataflex, that's kind of, like you said, it's renaming of a common data service, but they've got an offering for Teams now to allow you to do low-code, no-code solutions for Teams using Dataflex and Power Apps and those types of solutions. And it sounds very intriguing. So it's going to allow for much easier creation of solutions within Teams. But one of the things I find interesting about Dataflex is that you can now create solutions that allow for guest access to those solutions, which historically in Power Apps was not something you could do. You had to look at using the Power Apps portal for anything like that. So now they've taken that thing that was a premium feature and said, no, if you're in Teams, creating a solution in Teams, you can now do that as well. It'll be interesting to look at.
I wonder about the scalability of this stuff, right? I mean, I wonder about how it scales. Say you've got, 100,000 people creating these things. How does Dataflex scale across all those people creating different solutions and all of that?
Well, it sounds like you're going to need Dataflex Pro. There is a cap on transactions for Dataflex for the free version that you get, and once you surpass those transactions, then you're going to have to look at something like Dataflex Pro.
Is that transactions per user or transactions per
team? Org? It's per team.
Okay, yeah, though that's fine. I think that'll be okay.
So, isn't it also the issue that in Teams generally you don't know when people are creating things?
You know what? This will be a great time to hear from one of our sponsors.
Hey, yeah, thanks, Rob. And that's one of the many problems. So many organizations use Microsoft Teams, but they're not aware of how many files are shared outside of their organization, or even which of the Teams or Microsoft 365 groups are actually being used. ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of users migrate to Office 365, they learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migrating to it. And that's why they created ShareGate Apricot. It's an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and also Microsoft 365 groups.
Okay, welcome back. So we were talking about Teams, talking about Dataflex, and we were talking about how you're going to maintain and manage all that stuff. So one of the things that I find interesting about Dataflex is they've released it, or they've announced it right on the heels of announcing the lists for Teams and SharePoint. And I think this has basically opened up a can of worms for us, because now we're going to have to do a whole other what to use when scenario, whether you're going to use the Lists app or whether you're going to use Dataflex to create some sort of solution. So what do you guys think about that?
Is there only two? I mean, I feel like SharePoint's yet another option in there too, right? For the time being anyway. So we've kind of got three options now, but hopefully, and see, I don't know much about the Common Data Service since it was kind of a separate thing previously, but is it going to handle relational data better? Because I know that's one of the things we've always struggled with just using SharePoint, is that it's not a relational database. And so what I'm hopeful for is that this is really our opportunity to say, if we have more complex needs, this is really the scenario that you're going for.
Yeah, it apparently has a relational database built into Teams at no extra cost. So that's what I really need.
Here's the quote from the article. Dataflex is a new low-code data platform for Microsoft's Teams, and is said it provides relational data storage, rich data types, enterprise-grade governance, and one-click solution deployment.
Hmm. That enterprise-grade governance, I'm going to have to dig in on that because I don't believe them.
That's a whole other episode.
I mean, I just straight up don't believe them.
I mean, once again, a marketing person kind of jumping ahead and getting excited about using certain keywords and what does it actually mean?
That never happens. That never happens.
You know, the frustrating part here for me, at least from the enterprise perspective, is that I just feel there's not a real strategy on combining these features, right? I feel like Dataflex is going to provide us one aspect to build solutions. List is going to be another. You know, they're going to do similar things, but not the same thing. Why not invest the time and effort into creating something that is really rich and robust, that does all the things, right? As opposed to having these pockets of teams that are developing functionality that we end up having to explain to our users, saying, in this scenario, use List. In this scenario, use blah, blah, blah.
This is job security. No, job security. I'm okay with this.
Right.
Let's throw a couple more in there.
It's the which tool when question again on in a different area. It's just something else to go and blog about. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does anybody else feel like it might be a little bit like Microsoft Access in Teams?
Former MVP Brett Lonsdale.
If there's the relational database, you can build forms.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad if that's the case, I don't think that's a bad thing. Now, once you start slamming users and this thing starts exploding and the governance piece is going to be huge. How do you know when somebody's actually got a massive application that you're making money on, right? You could potentially be making money on. It's tied to revenue and you might not even know it, right? Maybe do we put special provisions around that team, anything like that, anything with data residency. There's all kinds of things you have to think about once you start introducing the concept of applications to this stuff. Especially with external users.
Yeah, the rule of thumb, though, with all of these features for organizations that are looking at this, and the problem of sprawl, no matter what workload that you're coming from, I mean, there is that issue. You can't just, and I think this is a lesson that we learned again and again and again, you can't just turn on every single toggle, every single feature, and then hope that it works out. And you're better off to, as an organization, to go in and pilot some of this capability and look and ask that question, what's going to be the impact? What happens if everyone goes in and creates this new, we're excited about the List app, I'm excited about the List app. I look at that as being the graduated scale in my mind, and you correct me if you guys think differently, is kind of the List app is there. It's supposed to be a broadly used user, end user, power user solution. You want something more advanced, SharePoint List. You want something more advanced, go build it. That's the Dataflex stuff. And so you have all those three options, but you as an organization where maybe it's not so much about governance and controls and locking the system down. It's more of just being aware and guiding your community, getting out ahead and understanding the technology and the potential impacts before your end users find out on your behalf. And then you're cleaning up.
And getting ahead of that support, right? I mean, it's going to be a support nightmare if you don't get ahead of that and at least, you know, figure out how you're going to handle supporting all those. Because I personally love users being able to create the solutions that they need to get their job done. You know, let IT take care of the bigger projects. Let users do what they need to do. But the minute something breaks, who are they going to call? They're going to call IT. The minute they screw something up, they're calling IT. And so you've just got to have that support answer in place for how are you going to support that.
Well, it's coming.
And that's a much easier answer. That's a much easier approach if you are in a mid-tier company, right? I mean, we've got 400,000 users, right? Trying to manage this across all of our user base is really difficult. I mean, it's really, really difficult.
Rob, did you not read there? It has governance. It has that.
Enterprise.
It's enterprise grade.
Yeah. No, but I mean, so what we end up having to do is we end up having to, if you can, turn it off first and then release it out to groups of users or whatever before we go into, you know, kind of a pilot phase or whatever. So there's a lot of extra work we have to do to release something into the wild before we can even really turn it on to everybody. I mean, there's a whole different approach that you have to take, because if we were to turn this on for everybody, everybody's going to start doing stuff. And what if it breaks? What if it, you know, what's that support work look? I mean, we just don't have the support team to support 400,000 users calling into support desk going, hey, lists don't work or whatever.
You know, but that's what we were doing though in client server world, that were our on-prem world. I mean, we were testing that stuff, pilot things out there, limited release, go and expand it. You learn a little bit more about it, expand it even broader. So that shouldn't be any different than, well, I know a lot of new people that are new first or second job in their career, and maybe they've just been in the cloud, these born in the cloud businesses that have not experienced that you know, methodology. But that's just the best practice. It always has been, and it should continue.
Yeah.
And maybe part of this, though, is, I don't want to say lack of education, but there's a lot to take in when you're moving to the cloud. So even with your best effort, sometimes there's people that are very overwhelmed, especially small to middle businesses, because they have a lot to learn in a very short amount of time. And especially here in the last 4 months, we know people have just up and just shifted everything they can into the cloud. So they're rolling out teams. They kind of know what they're doing, but maybe not entirely. And I guarantee you, there's going to be a lot of stuff over there. People start backpedaling because they didn't take the time to do that phase testing, or they rolled things out, or they don't even know what's there in an effort to roll it back or to maybe release it slowly. And most importantly, to secure it well. You know, Rob, you talk a lot about the governance and what content is in a team that now has data flex and, you know, all of that piece of it. Those things, Microsoft just keeps layering functionality on, and a lot of that's turned on by default. And then, you know, people just don't know that they need to maybe roll it back for a little bit until it's ready, or to keep it to a certain group. And so I think in the next 6 months to a year, we're going to be doing a lot of work with customers on, oh my gosh, stuff's everywhere. All this stuff got rolled out. People are using things. We can't support it all. What are we supposed to do? So I guess I'm a little worried of that backlash, and like just trying to help people get ahead of that is going to be really, really important.
Or not only backlash, but burnout. I mean, with the amount of stuff that's been coming for as long as it's been coming, we've been sprinting for months with changes and updates, and IT orgs are going to get burnt out at some point. I mean, and that could be just as bad. I mean, just like, I'm done with it. This is too much. And, you know, I'm going to quit and go work for Amazon because they're not doing this much innovation. I don't know.
I don't know. All we can see, though, is,
I mean, teams, we're seeing a high rate of burnout, a very, very high rate of burnout here at my company. And it's, you know, it's not because we're understaffed. It's just because things now are, you know, this month are radically different than they were 4 months ago, which are radically different than they were 4 months ago. So it's almost like walking on, I've said this before on the show, is that it's almost like walking on quicksand as you're trying to support this, right? Everything's moving under your feet. And by the time you set something up to be supported, it's changed, right? And, you know, I look at Power Automate as an example, the way that thing is evolving on such a rapid pace. We tried to do like cybersecurity reviews of it. And by the time they started to the time they finished, the product was radically different, right? Their review. So like we had more connectors, and we had the ways to block connectors. We had, you know, there's all these things that are changing. So by the time we finished our evaluation, we essentially had to start over to do it again, because the product was a different product than when we started.
So Rob, as a consultant, why are you complaining about that? That's awesome.
It is.
Continue building that. Yeah.
No. It is great. But I do more of the support for the internal company, right? So just supporting our consultants and stuff. So it keeps me busy. You know, definitely job security, but wow. I don't think, saying all this, and I know I complain a lot on the show about it. I would never want to go back into an on-prem world, ever. You know, I think as tough as it is to keep ahead and to keep our pulse on what's changing, I think an on-prem world would bore me to tears at this point.
I wouldn't mind being bored for just a few weeks. Can we be bored for a few weeks and then, you know, just take a breath, just pause?
You should talk to your boss, man. See if she'll let you have some vacation days.
I don't know. We'll see.
Every time I look at you, you're always on the lake in a boat.
That's right.
It's a rough life. It's a rough,
But this has also been difficult. I mean, obviously for end users of the technology, I think there's an added layer of complexity and, you know, for the product companies. I mean, Brett, I'd be interested to hear from you, like, because this is, you're keeping up with all the same changes from a user perspective, but, and then the API, there's stuff that expanded what you can do, then having to go and modify your own products to keep up with all that. So that's a lot of fun.
I'm super excited about, yeah, everything that's going on from the ISV point of view, especially with what we do, because we're now delivering on the back of the SharePoint framework, and you guys have heard this before, but you know, in order to keep up with the cloud, of course, we had to move away from those WSPs that we had in SharePoint on-premises. And one of the nice things about that, and actually I opened up a virtual machine today to do a demonstration of our permissions tool in SharePoint 2016. And yeah, it was like, actually, this is pretty cool for what you could do back then. There was a lot of features in it that we couldn't deliver for a long, long time for SharePoint Online, because yeah, we offered an integrated product that just couldn't work inside the add-in model. There was just too many things that were sandboxed, if you like. So yeah, now we've got the SharePoint framework. It's awesome. In fact, one of the things I did today as well was I've also submitted two of our products out of four that are going into the App Store. So the App Store now supports SharePoint framework. So I'm really glad to finally get them in there, because we've had the best part of 2 or 3 years now of using the SharePoint framework and doing all of our own marketing around those products. And that's one thing we missed out on, was actually having the add-ins in AppSource, you know. So now we've got the SharePoint framework in there as well. I think that'll be hopefully really, really good for, you know, generating new business and so on for ourselves. And the fact that we've got two platforms to work in with one development model, that's super exciting as well. You can build this stuff for SharePoint, and it's also automatically available for Teams, both personal apps and also tabs as well. So yeah, it's great. I'm loving it at the moment, certainly.
So I think the one thing that we can say about all of this is that Teams is kind of at the surface of everything, right? So Teams is like taking over every new feature, every new thing that's coming out has some kind of connection in to Teams. So Christian, I know you recently wrote an article, or you had commented, I know, for a publisher somewhere about what's going on with some accusations coming in from Slack. So do you want to talk about that and kind of Teams dominance and what's going on?
Yeah, an article that just came out yesterday that Slack has filed an antitrust lawsuit in the European Union against Microsoft for unfair practices in bundling Teams. And I've not read the actual claims, and I'm interested to see the exact wording of it, because from the description of the article, and there's been a couple people that kind of immediate response is, this is Netscape all over again, and yeah, Microsoft is guilty of doing this. I'm like, no, it's not the same at all. It's, in fact, I have every single week, I have conversations with, because I have a client that is a direct competitor to OneDrive. The company Ignite, you might know, with an E, Ignite. And they have a great product. They've got a lot of value add. They play nice with Microsoft, but they go compete directly against one aspect of the suite of tools. And yet they look at the opportunity. They don't dwell on the fact that, you know, hey, well, this comes out of the box and everybody, you're forced to have OneDrive. It's like everybody knows that, whether it's OneDrive or Teams or Outlook, like, you can either remove as part of your auto provisioning for your end users, you can include some other third-party solutions as part of that provisioning setup. There are SKUs that you can purchase that have Teams included. There are SKUs that you don't have to pay for it. Or if you do pay for it, you can elect for some users that you don't assign them licenses, or you don't turn it on, you don't install it. I mean, you have a lot of different options. And I run into a lot of companies that are huge Office 365 SharePoint organizations, but who use Slack. Yep. So where's the problem? I think my comment that I made for this this reporter was that it seems to me that it is more of a PR stunt than a valid argument. that they look at Microsoft Inspire is going on this week. They're going to make, it's like, remember a few years back, the SharePoint conference, I think it was Los Angeles.
Yep.
What was the name of that? What was the company that had the marching band
that nobody saw? They were protesting or whatever.
But they marched around. They were in like an industrial area behind the conference center, and people are like, was that a marching band? And everybody just thought, like, why did Microsoft pay for a marching band that then nobody saw? But it was this competitor. But I mean, so Slack is doing something to get attention. I don't believe that they believe that they're going to get any traction in the EU around this, other than, you know, causing some angst to Microsoft and getting some PR for themselves. Because from, again, not having read the claims, but from the surface, I don't think they have claims.
Well, and they even said at the beginning, they've said on record that
last month or a month and a half ago,
Teams is not a competitor to Slack. I mean, that should throw out their case right there. You stated publicly that it's not a competitor. Get out of here.
Yeah. In fact, that's the link. It was, their Slack CEO, Stuart Butterfield, in early May, talking to, like, I don't know who it was, Forbes or something, said, yeah, we don't even look at Teams as a competitor. So we'll just sue them. So you know that's going to be in Microsoft's arguments right back.
Right.
Yeah. Come on.
You know? I don't think it has any merit. And who knows about how the Euro courts are going to work. I mean, I don't know. They have a lot of different rules, which is probably why they didn't file it in the U.S. because they can get things through in a way. But I would think if Teams was baked into the OS, they might have a better argument. But since it's mostly part of Office and used in conjunction with Office to enhance the experience, I just don't buy.
And architecturally, it's built on SharePoint and Exchange as well. So it's.
Yeah. You have to have all those other things in place before that. It's not like the browser wars, right? Where I could see that argument or understand that, but don't buy Office.
but that's the thing. I mean, you can buy Office and not use Teams.
Yep.
It's crazy. It happens.
We'll see how long this sticks around. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's spot on a publicity stunt. Absolutely. Just to sour the name, get their name out there. Oh, we're fighting back. We're getting squashed by the man or whatever, big, ugly Microsoft just trying to squash us. But,
or it's a dying gasp and they're like going under and it's like, we're dying. We've got to try something. And so it's their Hail Mary so they don't have to file bankruptcy.
So my kids used to use Slack a lot. And, of course, we've used it at work, too, and everything. But the new thing is that they're using now is called Discord. You guys use that or heard of that?
I've heard of that.
So they're all using Discord now. So Slack was like, oh, you're just like an old geezer if you're using Slack.
That's you what probably people still use Facebook.
That's what people that graduated in 2016 used. or whatever, but they're all using Discord now.
Yeah, I must admit, I don't hear of anybody using Slack. I mean, it's all Teams or Zoom.
We have some clients who's like their dev teams love Slack, and they're like, you're gonna take Slack from our dead fingers, but that's only
that's only because of the plugins, right? The connectors that they use for the build tools and all that. But I mean, devs love it. I don't know. Zoom is big, though. I would say Zoom has merit. Zoom, specifically with the coronavirus hitting. I mean, Zoom exploded.
They did some things right, and we've had this discussion, I know some of us and other venues around, but in webinar software, the things that they do that Teams still can't do. I'm a paid Zoom user. I use it for specific scenarios, but day in, day out for my company, my client work, everything is within Teams. As they add other features, I'm looking forward to not paying for another third-party service. That if I could do it all in Teams, that'd be fantastic.
Mm. It's great to see some of those features that we've had in Zoom as well coming into Teams now as well. So you also just announced that Inspire was the rooms, the breakout rooms.
Yeah.
And
well, the main reason we use Zoom is for the 7x7. And as soon as we get that, we're probably going to drop our Zoom license.
Yeah. And they're doing some other innovative thing. What's the name of that feature, that new thing where everybody's sitting in the same room?
Together mode.
Yeah, the together mode. I'm excited about that as well, to be able to see, rather than the square box is trying to look at 49 faces that way, but to see everybody like we're sitting in a classroom and you're talking to everybody. I think that'll be the things like that, those kinds of innovations. Again, they're thinking about how do we reduce the fatigue of doing these online meetings. But
have you seen that there's AI involved so that the people look like they're paying attention to the speaker? That's borderline creepy, but we'll see.
The walkie-talkie stuff looks cool as well for first line workers. Did you see that?
I heard about it, but I haven't seen it. What's that do?
Yeah, so it's if you think of first line workers where they need the sort of walkie-talkies to communicate, and they've got their phones and they've got a walkie-talkie. So it's basically bringing those two things into one device so they can use their phones through Teams. For sort of back and forth chat and so on, which obviously great for, I don't know, warehouse operatives and things like that as well. Yeah. Which
walkie talkies, cool. Is that what you call them?
Walkie talk. What do you call them?
I don't know. We call them walkie talkies too. I figured England would have some kind of fancy name for those.
What were you thinking? I don't know where your mind was going on that one.
I don't know. It's just always something like that where I was like, you call it a courgette? Really? Yeah.
Or an aerial. One of my favorite stories was the aerial.
What's an elastic, right? I mean, it's just like...
It's a rubber band.
An elastic.
So you got to tell the story of the aerial.
Yeah. When Nick and I were going across the country, Nick Swan and I were going across the country to, I think it was the conference in, I think it was the one in...
SPC09 in Vegas.
Yeah, maybe it was in Vegas. We were in a motorhome somewhere in the middle of nowhere on the West Coast, and Nick got up early. He was like, let's go. Let's get an early start. We'll end driving early at the day, and we'll just relax, whatever. So I was like, yeah. He goes, go outside and put down the aerial. And I was like, what? He goes, put down the aerial. So I went outside, and I looked around. I was like, I don't see an aerial. I came back in. He goes, did you put down the aerial? I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Put down the aerial. And I was like, and he came out, and he pointed to me, and I was like, oh, the antenna. Okay. The TV antenna. I was like, oh, yeah, that's English. English sometimes does not translate.
Yeah. Not at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This so is where the show naturally dies.
Yep. So, Christian, is there anything else going on in your world you wanna talk about? Anything you wanna tell the listeners about?
We have as you all know, and I think everybody's participated. I don't know if Rob has, but so I've been running these tweet jams for 9 years now. This is my ninth year of running these. And typically in July, we focus on a partner-related topic. So we're going to be doing this again. So that's on the 30th. It's always the last week of every month where you see these. It's on Twitter using the Collab Talk hashtag. Anybody can participate. And so we're going to be talking about partner opportunities. So we're going to really pushing out, building the panel of business owners, of regional directors, and a lot of MVPs as well, but really focusing on the business side and the Inspire attendees, those that should attend Inspire just to provide feedback of, you know, here's what Microsoft is pushing out there. What are your actual takeaways? What are you doing? Where do you see those opportunities to continue to build within the Microsoft ecosystem? So, you know, always a lot of fun doing these things. I get a ton out of them personally, running them. And so hopefully all of you will be there.
Awesome. So
my boss will let me be there.
We will definitely be there. So if people have been living under a rock and they don't know how to find you on Twitter, how do they find you?
Yeah, so mine's easy. So Buckley Planet. Which is some people have asked, why such a long Twitter handle? It's also my blog, buckleyplanet.com.
I mean, that's how I always used to find you, but.
Yeah, Buckley, you go type it into to Google or Bing, you'll find me. I write a lot, but Buckley Planet actually came from my brother-in-law. Had a creative website for his artwork called Fisher Planet, and I created Buckley Planet to mock him. I created a fake site with fake art that I just quickly threw together in like a couple hours, and it just stuck for some reason. But that's how you can find me. And of course, out on LinkedIn as well. So feel free to connect with me and let me know that you heard the podcast here and and I'll definitely connect with you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate having you on and hearing your insights and learning more about Utah.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's great to see you again.
Good to see you as well.
So if anybody wants to get a hold of us, has any questions for the show, if they want to make fun of Christian, you can email us at info@techsplaining.net. If you have any show ideas, let us know that as well. Otherwise, we will see you guys next time.